Hey, I'm Chris.
And I'm Owen.
And this is Dead Wargamers Society.
Hi, listeners. Today we have a very special episode. We're going to talk about a game called Battletech. Now, Battletech is one of those games that if you brought up any war game at a picnic or randomly with coworkers at work, outside of maybe 40K or X-Wing, Battletech is one of the few games that someone might have heard of. So why are we talking about it? It is a game that was dead for a while, and we'll go into that in more detail. But also, we wanted to talk about it because of the resurrected war games we hear about a lot. The most common one is Blood Bowl. People will often say, hey, this war game just died, but let's do what Blood Bowl did. Let's keep it alive. And I've always been surprised that people haven't said, no, let's do what Battletech did, because I think of the dead war games I can think of that have come back from the grave, Battletech has probably been the most successful. I think it's really a success story of the passion of the community. I think there's some special things about it that make it a little bit different than a lot of other war games on the market. And I think we're going to talk a little bit about it in that context. So really, this is going to be an episode about the story of Battletech as a dead slash resurrected war game, not necessarily a review or history of Battletech. Other people have done that much better than we possibly could. We're not extreme experts on Battletech. If you go to sarna.net, there are people there that have really dedicated a good chunk of their life to the history and the culture of Battletech. So if you want a real expert's opinion, go there. We don't have, you know, almost 40 years of experience playing Battletech. We are not the experts, but we're going to give our opinions as a dead war game regardless. And having said all that, Chris, would you like to introduce our guest?
Sure. And this might sound a little bit disjointed because we had some minor recording difficulties, but to give you guys your first introduction, it's kind of tough with Bobby. Bobby is a very interesting person. He's a little bit tough to describe. It can be anywhere from construction worker, game enthusiast, Battletech enthusiast, friend, hillbilly grill expert, Ron Swanson. And I still feel like you're missing certain parts on Bobby. Bobby is definitely one of the most passionate wargamers that I've seen, especially for games going outside of the GW spectrum, although he also does have some experience with the GW stuff as well. Bobby and I have been teammates on a bunch of different gaming teams that all share the same name. And we'll get into that a little bit more in our post-credit post-amble. Bobby's experience really goes with the gaming industry. He's done a lot of things for a lot of companies, whether it's been studio painting for Dwarven Forge, playtesting for Dark Age, or making his own paints that he sold for quite a bit. A lot of people do know of the Mad Bobby range of paints that used to be out there, and they did definitely make one of the greatest series of water effects that I've ever seen. So yeah, Bobby, we have him here because he is super excited about where Battletech's going nowadays. He used to play way back in the day. He got into it along with MechWarrior 2, which is now seems ancient and makes us feel old. And recently picked it back up following the computer game and the most recent Kickstarters. So we're very excited to have him on to share a little bit of his input onto that Battletech universe. Anyway, welcome to the show, Bobby. We're happy to
have you
here.
Thank you again for having me.
we usually like to kick off the show with what everyone's kind of been up to. So, Bobby, what have you been doing hobby-wise?
Honestly, all I've been doing hobby-wise has been painting Battletech. I got a couple of the early boxes from the first wave of the Kickstarter that came out, and I've been painting those up in Wolf's Dragoon slash, Widow Spider's colors. So I like being able to play whatever the hell I want with the same color scheme. So just good times.
Right on. Before we go too far into this, Bobby, I wanted to ask a preamble question. MechWarrior 2, great video game or greatest video game?
One of the greatest, absolutely.
Awesome. We can officially continue to record the podcast.
How about you, Owen? What have you been up to?
Oh, painting this and that. I'm finishing up some Resolution. I've also started assembling some Conquest, The Last Argument of Kings stuff. I'm really stoked on that game right now. It's got some cool vintage vibes to it. And yeah, looking forward to actually getting out in the real world and playing with some local folks once everything gets back to normal here in the world. How about you, Chris?
So I did look out recently, just found out that I won the Dust Paint a Day or Paint a Point a Day challenge for December.
Oh, congratulations.
Which is pretty neat. So I'm kind of prepping some stuff for January, see how many I can do in a row. Got a little bit off track today because I was prepping for the episode by playing BattleTech or MechWarrior on the computer pretty much all day today. So
nice, man.
Yeah. But that's been about it for now.
Sweet deal. Well, with that having been said, let's talk about BattleTech. So let's go through like a really, really, really brief history of BattleTech. Just so if we have some listeners out there that aren't terribly familiar with like the history of BattleTech, they'll at least be informed before we go into the broader discussion. I'll start with a quick wiki style history, and then I'll pass it over to Bobby for a more in-depth history. So in brief, BattleTech was originally called Battle Droids. It was designed by Jordan Weissman and published by a company called FASA in 1984. It's been through, by my count, four major releases. The BattleTech universe has been translated to video games, as we just talked about, board games, flipbook games, toys, a god-awful animated cartoon show, pretty much every flavor of merch imaginable, and I was unable to count the number of novels that have been released in the BattleTech universe. BattleTech, an associated product you might also be familiar with, is called MechWarrior, is published by Catalyst Lab Games, who recently released the products from the Clan Invasion Kickstarter, which included a rules release, some new beautiful plastic mechs and associated products, so things like plastic elementals, which are little power armor guys on hex bases. The game, it uses a 2d6 resolution system. It uses somewhere between 6mm and 1 over 285 scale miniatures. Yeah, it's played on a tabletop in a hex grid system. So something like a war game, something like a board game, somewhere in between. Actually, Catalyst Lab Games calls it a board game. To me, it's a war game. We can have that argument to death. Having said all that, Bobby, do you want to give us a quick history of the BattleTech universe?
That's the strangest thing anyone's ever asked me to do. but the elevator pitch version of the game is it's a way to play it making war crimes happen in giant robots on your tabletop, which is fun. At the end of the day, that's really what it is. That's why we're all playing. We can all go home now. The origin of all this conflict came from something that was called Star League. Humanity had hundreds of years of success and a golden age where they reached out to the stars, colonized everything, and then had to start fighting because people. The weirdest thing about it, that you look at it from a normal type perspective, if you're out in the stars and you have all this resource and everything under the sun, under all the suns to throw at each other, why would you have honor duels with giant robots? Why wouldn't you nuke the shit out of each other for a while? And that's what happened. But they lost so much technology, they couldn't keep existing, keeping nuking the shit out of each other. They had what was called the Ares Convention, where they came together, decided that all wars had to be fought on the ground, and out of that came Battle Mechs, and the game that we play now, is simulating conflict between them.
No, I think like that covers pretty much like a lot of it, and you know, outside of the whole, yeah, humans suck. So, you know, yeah, it is a very grim, dark, you know, people explore and everything's fantastic. You know, for a while, the Star League was basically the Federation.
In a lot of ways, yeah.
Eventually, you know, people want more power. You know, you want more power. You want more things. You know, like there's not enough resources. And that's a lot of how it started. So, you know, a lot of times people will start out wrongly. But start out with the Inner Sphere. So who are the major, like, Inner Sphere powers?
Well, the Inner Sphere are kind of the big players from the perspective of fiction for most of BattleTech's history. There's five major houses. There's the Steiners, who are kind of Prussian super-industrial, not at all tactful, just massive industrial state that solves all their problems with money and money, bodies, and resources, and they're good at it. Just going around clockwise on the traditional map, from the Steiners, you have the Kuritas. They're your weeb house. They run the Draconis Combine. Everything is inexplicably very Japanese. If you love the dragon mech chassis and you want your samurai to be piloting giant robots, you probably like the Kuritas. Going around from them, south of them, you have the Davions running the Federated Suns. They're very, very Western European. They were a federation, now a monarchy through much fuckery. They, on paper, they're the nice ones, but they're not, because what monarchy is. Going around from them, you got the Capellans. Fuck the Capellans. They're a space North Korea. Nobody likes them, for good reason. Unless you do, then you know, good for you, I guess. I need somebody to shoot at.
Last up is Merrick.
And then you have the...
Space America. Free Worlds.
The United Worlds. They're like a weird amalgamation of like early 2000s American politics with early 20th century Austro-Hungary. If they could ever... If they could ever agree on anything, they would definitely be the most powerful house in the sphere, but they don't. So they are not.
So before delving into who the clans are, what are the clans? I was going to say, how did the clans start? Because that I think that that's my period of the game, you know? like this is where I found out about everything.
Well, that's kind of where I jumped into it. With MechWarrior 2, that was my first exposure, and that's all focused on the clans. But the clans came about when the Star League we were talking about earlier, when they collapsed. Their military saw, if we stick around, all these lunatics playing Game of Thrones in space are going to use us against each other, and everybody's going to fucking die. So the military left, just jumped out at an unknown space, found some rocks that they could park on. It's a gross oversimplification, but they started over. And formed a new warrior society where everything was honor-driven and they were growing their own soldiers in vats, and it's a completely different outside society. They left, they formed their own thing, and they came back with higher technology, better soldiers, better weapons, better machines, because they were starting with the all the technology that was lost, because they're the ones that took it.
That all sounds yep. about right. So, if you had to pick the what would most likely be seen as the biggest four superpowers in the clans, what would those four be?
We'd probably start with Clan Wolf and Clan Jade Falcon, the two that you see banging against each other in MechWarrior 2 and every IP since. The big difference between the two of them, Wolf and Falcon, is they're the quintessential Warden and Crusader clans. The Wardens, like Clan Wolf, are bent on conquering the sphere for its own protection, to reunite humanity, to bring about a new age where everybody can get along. That's their end goal. They want everybody to live. The Jade Falcons think their way of life is superior, and everyone else kind of just has to die or get out of the way.
So I'm surprised you went with Jade Falcon and not Smoke Jaguar, but go on.
Well, Jade Falcon are the ones that everybody... season the games, you
oh, sure.
see
yeah.
more of them.
It also depends on which game you're talking about. I think that's the tough part too, is for me it's Smoke Jaguar, because I started with MechWarrior 3 and not 2. And in 3 they were the major force, but unfortunately, like, story-wise, spoiler alert, even though Smoke Jaguars were super powerful and created some of the coolest mechs that exist, like the Daishi, they were eliminated. So
that's the other reason I didn't pick Smoke Jaguars.
It's like Jade Falcon, you know, despite nobody liking them, somehow managed to survive. So it turns into one of those things where it's like, you know, where did you get into the game? What were the stories that you read? You know, but Jade Falcon and Wolf do seem to be the two that have kind of been those quintessential, the Warden and the... I was going to call them the aggressors, but...
Well, they call them Crusaders in the fiction.
And, all right, so if those are the top two, who are the two runners-up?
The two runners-up that I find the most interesting are the Ghost Bears. They're very, very much space Vikings. They don't want conflict, but if you poke them, they will respond with overwhelming force. And left to their own devices, to funnel a fictional quirk, they would actually rather settle disputes with games of American football.
Nice.
Nobody's willing to play against them because they have a genetically engineered super football team that no one's ever beaten. But left to their own devices, that's how they would settle their disputes. And that, I think that's cool. I like that about them.
Okay, so Bobby's a fan of Space Minnesota. Who's number four?
Number four, I would go for the Diamond Sharks. They were the first ones to really part with rigid clan thinking. I don't want to get into Nicholas Krasinski being crazy and setting them up for failure, but he did. And the Diamond Sharks, I think, are among the first that parted with his thinking and developed a mercantile empire between the Inner Sphere and the clans. And they had some very interesting stories.
I do think that, in short, the best story about Diamond Shark is how they got the name, because they weren't originally Diamond Shark. They used to be Sea Fox. And all of these clans are basically named after some type of animal that exists on the, you know, barren worlds that they basically populated after.
Adjective, hyphen, totem animal, yeah.
And Clan Sea Fox, you know, was a heavy mercantile. Mercantile, yes. That was the word I was looking for.
Yep.
And they existed a lot on trade. And I believe it was Jade Falcon decided to dishonor the Sea Foxes by releasing a new apex predator into their planet, which was the Diamond Shark, which ate all of the Sea Foxes. Rather than just being dishonored by this and, you know, letting it get to them, they completely changed their clan name to Clan Diamond Shark, because that was clearly stronger because it ate all of the Sea Foxes.
Well, you had to keep your brand fresh.
But and there's a lot of that going on. I do think it's important to note there's a lot of clans. Like there's awesome. A ton out there. Some are smaller, some are bigger, like some are more well known. There's a lot of jokes about it that are out there. I do think right before we recorded this, Ash from Guerrilla Mini Games has posted up that it's basically, if you asked like a bunch of 7-year-olds to make team names for Counter-Strike, you'd see a lot of the clan names coming out, like, you know, yeah, we'll be Clan Murder Weasel. And it's not too far off. But
it wouldn't surprise me if it was.
But I think it is part of, you know, the endearing quality of BattleTech in there, where
absolutely.
A lot of this is more fun stuff that you can really get behind. They didn't take it so seriously to the point of like, no, like, we're going to go and find like some crazy Latin name, you know, to name this that's near unpronounceable because it's cooler. It's like, nope, we're going to have fun. But moving along, people have the option, right? Because when you go to play the game, it seems like you can basically play out of any faction you want with any jack you want or mech you want for the most part. But if you wanted to play outside of one of these major factions, you know, you don't fit in with the Inner Sphere, or you don't want to be a member of this clan agenda, is there another like faction that you can play out as, or a different way that you can identify in the game?
Well, I like mercs, because mercs have the most fun. Mercs can do whatever they want. My favorite unit, Wolf's Dragoons, they can do anything. They can play anywhere. They can do anything they want with anything they want. That's, you know, mercs have the most fun. On top of that, the most of the conflicts you see between the great powers and the fiction are like battalions, entire regiments of mechs clashing with each other, and you can't do that on the table with BattleTech rules. It would take you days to play out any kind of conflict. Most of what we're doing on the table is going to be, you know, all this plausible deniability shit that you're going to have one or two mechs go and try to do a dirty job and get out.
And that's where mercs would really fit in.
That's where mercs shine. That's why I think most people that are playing at least BattleTech Classic are either playing Honor Duels or they're playing mercs.
So lastly, going into, I think where the BattleTech universe is a little bit different from a lot of game settings is there's been several eras. Like, this isn't a fiction that stretches, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. This is thousands of years, and each one of those eras kind of has its own setting of technology available. Who are the forces involved? What's the story going on? You know, could you briefly talk about those eras that are kind of existing in the game?
Sure. It's not thousands of years, it's just under 8,000 years. Starting out, you have like the Star League era, which is the end of the Golden Age, which is the highest tech you're going to see for a long time. At the end of the Star League, you have the Secession Wars, which is the Mad Max, everybody's driving broken machines out while everybody's playing Game of Thrones in space. So it's Mad Max, Game of Thrones, and good Star Wars at the same time. After the Succession Wars, you get the Clan Invasion, which is where the clans come back and bring all that Star League tech that's been improved over time back into the sphere, and you have these super mechs clashing with these busted things that have been fighting each other for hundreds of years with no improvement and no maintenance. That's just a fun asymmetric clash. After that, you get the Civil War and Jihad, where everybody's got this higher tech, and Jihad, the tech gets absolutely insane. I think it's almost unplayable. There's too many rules. After that, you get Dark Ages, where they're source books. I honestly haven't played them. I can't speak to how much fun they are. Those came out after I left the game, before I came back, and I haven't gotten many games in since. And there's a new era coming out that they're calling the Ilkhan era, and who the hell knows what's going to happen there.
Fair.
Short answer, there's a lot. You have to find a place where you want to play, and people play all these eras.
Mm-hmm. So to me, this sounds almost like the difference between like early, middle, and late war and Flames of War. So it's like almost like a...
It's like that on steroids, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we talked a lot about background. Let's talk about the actual game itself. So there's not just one way to play Battletech, right?
Nope, not at all. A big part of the ethos of Battletech is make it your own. If you play all the rules and all the books, you'll never play the game. But you can pick and choose. Say, I want to use these systems from this book. I want to use these systems from this book if you want to get that deep into it. But at the core of it, there's two main ways to play. There's Classic and there's what they call Alpha Strike.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between the two is Classic is your super crunchy, roll every weapon, roll every hit location, figure out where each machine gun bullet lands, and there's a lot of tables. That turns a lot of people off, but they do it as efficiently as can be done with a 2D6 system.
Mm-hmm.
If you want that level of detail. The other side of that, the Alpha Strike, is where if you want that company-on-company engagement, you can play it and it'll look and feel more like a game of 40K.
Okay.
A little bit more crunch, but you get to put a lot of mechs down and have a lot more explosions happen a lot faster.
Cool. So you got some different ways to play. It sounds like one's almost like a role-playing game. The other is probably closer to a tabletop game. Do you think that's a fair summary?
Yeah, kind of. It's one definitely has more role-playing elements built into it. If you wanted to play a Mech Warrior role-playing game, which is also a thing, I would want to use the classic rules instead of Alpha Strike, because I wouldn't want my character I'd been playing for a year to get blown up because he rolled one good crit.
Makes sense.
Yeah. I was going to look at it almost like the last podcast we did, we covered how certain games are more simulationist war games, and I think with Classic, it falls into that, like, this is a military simulation in space. Like, this is, it's covering all of the things for it, you know, where you're covering the ammunition that you have on board, you're covering the heat that your mech generates, you're, you know, every single thing could strip an armor in a specific point. Like, the sheets always blow me away for a lot of the mechs, where you basically have a like 8-inch by 11-inch sheet that has a full diagram of your mech. You have spaces to write notes like about your piloting skills and anything else going on. You have every single weapon, all of your ammunition, and all of your charts. And that's for each mech that you're taking in the game. So it's a super, super crunchy system.
It is super crunchy. I mean, you could probably teach somebody how to play Age of Sigmar in less time than it would take to go over the anatomy of a Battletech Classic data sheet.
Yep, absolutely.
So,
go ahead.
I was going to say, with these two games, you know, which one of these is using hexes? Which one of these is playing on an open battlefield?
The cool answer to that question is whichever one you want. There's ways to do both in both.
Interesting.
Would you say that hexes are more common?
I haven't really seen the game played much since I came back to it, because I only really got back into actively involving myself with Battletech at, you know, near the end of 2020, and we've all been around in 2020. Nobody's playing games on a table right now.
Fair.
But I have been playing on Megamech, which is kind of like Tabletop Simulator, but all it does is Battletech Classic.
Okay.
And that's all hex-based.
I'll ask it a different way. When you look at the Battletech introductory box set and a Time for War box set, does that include hex maps? Or
that includes hex maps, yeah.
Okay, so my understanding is hexes are probably the more typical way to play.
Yes, out of the box, you play on a hex map.
Okay, but cool.
I was going to say, every time I've seen Battletech played, like at a convention, you know, at a major like event or what have you, it's always been on hexes. One of the local stores that used to do a, while the game was really just like not being played in 2015 and 2016, all of it would always be done classic BattleTech on hexes, I was super bummed out when I got the two new starters, and one of our semi-local stores was like, "Oh yeah, we're gonna run like BattleTech on a regular basis," and the guy who decided to run is like, "Yeah, I really don't like hexes, so we're just gonna run it on like a standard table." And I was like, "Oh man, this totally was not the game that like I thought it was." You know, like this was not what I was trying to jump into.
if you want to do that, you want to play Alpha Strike, and you can't take it too seriously because the game was balanced around hexes. But if you are used to playing your games on 3D terrain and you need that pretty battlefield in your living room to sell it to yourself or in the game store, wherever it is you're playing, you can do it. I think the hexes are easier.
I'm inclined to agree, but obviously, I mean, the fact you can do it either way gives people different options, which is nice. So we spent a lot of time on background and just like a real gloss over the mechanics. Let's pivot to, you know, the time that BattleTech died, basically. So like, let's get into some like publication history. So the game starts in 84 and goes through 2001 with FASA. FASA is the company that designed the game. Jordan Weissman works there. Everything's going good. But in 2001, FASA closes its doors. Some background on FASA. It was started by Jordan Weissman and one other guy whose name escapes me. But what really, I think, helped FASA a lot was Jordan's dad, Mort, joined the company. Mort came from a book publishing background. They initially started with mostly RPG books, so I think that experience was really helpful. But in 2001, the rumor is that Mort wanted to... They weren't in any like financial dire straits, but Mort looked at the industry, said, you know, I think there might be a contraction soon. Now's a good time. Let's just shut it down. So they shut down. Jordan goes on to a company called WizKids, you may know from the HeroClix series. HeroClix is something that Jordan designed, something to keep in mind for future discussions. But the rights for the different FASA properties go to different people. So for between 2002 and 2007, a company called FAMPRO releases what's called Classic BattleTech Source Material, which is just a rehash for the most up through the storyline of about 3067. There's some of that gets into the nitty-gritty of what the Jihad was that was introduced around this time. They fleshed it a little bit towards the end of their tenure, but for the most part, it's just a rehash of the classic books, whereas WizKids gets the rights to everything 100 years later for what are called the Dark Ages, and they have a game called Mech Warrior Dark Ages. They release with the clicks, like i.e. like you touch your miniature, which has a little dial on the base to click it through. 2007, FAMPRO goes under. There's a lot of stuff going on, but a company called InRes Media that released a lot of BattleTech fiction forms a subdivision called Catalyst Game Labs. They hire pretty much all the U.S. FAMPRO site. They actually are based out of the same building FAMPRO was. And since 2007, Catalyst Game Labs has been the publisher of the BattleTech tabletop stuff. What's interesting to me is that you had a six-year period where everything was just a rehash. There wasn't anything new. You got some new art, which, okay, arguably that's new, but rules-wise, there wasn't anything new. There wasn't any huge game balance changes. But in the same period, if you went to Gen Con, went to Adepticon, people still played the game. There was still a strong community for BattleTech. Now, granted, this was a big game in its time. MechWarrior 2, the video game we talked about earlier in the episode, I think definitely helped it out with that. The fact that, you know, I don't think it was any good, but absolutely, culturally, you can speak to the BattleTech cartoon as something that, like, speaks to its cultural importance. This was a big game, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, the BattleTech cartoon is actually interesting, a small aside, that they've actually retconned that. This is the cleverest retcon I've ever seen in the entire industry. They said the cartoon was a propaganda piece.
That's awesome. In the context of a Dead War game, you know, fast forward to 2020. Now, granted, we had a really smart release of some really nice new plastic miniatures in 2019, immediately following a BattleTech video game that came out for PC by a company called Harebrained Studios. Actually, funnily Games. Enough, Jordan yep. Weissman is actually part of that studio. So the guy that designed BattleTech is part of the Battletech video game. Who'd have thunk?
Why it's good? Huh.
Yeah, I mean, amongst other reasons. I mean, without getting in too hard in the degree, do you think it's fair to say that that's a fairly reasonable representation of the tabletop game?
It's close. It captures the feeling of it real well.
Yeah, I mean, like, to me, it's more Battletech than, say, MechWarrior 2 was. Now, you can make the argument MechWarrior was always the RPG, so the MechWarrior games did a good job of making you a mech pilot doing your one mech thing. Battletech does a good job of managing a lance of Battletechs. It's not perfect, but it's reasonably close.
Absolutely, yeah.
The new plastic miniatures helped. You know, Catalyst Lab Games has been doing a good job of putting up plastic miniatures for Battletech. Yeah, the 25th anniversary box set in 2011. That was nice. For listeners that aren't familiar with this, it was interesting in that the original Battletech box, so the second edition of the game after Battle Droids, actually contained paper dollies. You didn't have any plastic miniatures with it. One thing to note too, FASA didn't release miniatures. They, you know, lent that out to Ralpatha at the time, which is now probably better known as Ironwind Metals. You know, people that are really in the know will know that Ironwind actually bought back the Ralpatha name and have been releasing miniatures from Ralpatha. But for those of you who play Battletech, you probably know them better as Ironwind Metals. That's a little bit different than a lot of other miniature game companies. Games Workshop has really set the model of if you make the rules, you make the minis.
Yep.
That's a tread a different path.
Sometimes.
Exactly. Sometimes. okay. You had at least a 6-year period where really nothing new happened. And even through 2021 today, we still don't have anything for the Ilcon period. So we've been dealing with the same Battletech universe since about 2001. If I took...
Well, the novels have been moving forward.
The novels have been putting new stuff out. If you stopped the Warhammer 40K fiction today and said, we might write new novels, but there's nothing new that's ever going to happen.
I say, in complete fairness, they kind of did that in the 80s. The story hasn't really advanced, except for with the stuff that happened with 8th edition with Bobby Gurleyman, you know, hooking up with an Eldar for reasons and all that nonsense.
Sure. Let's take a lesser.
I get what you're trying to say, though, Owen, is basically if they less so the story moving forward and a lot more. If Games Workshop decided, hey, we're not putting out any more models or rules going forward. Like,
right,
40K is effectively going to be a dead game.
And if you only release new codexes and new art, but other than very small, like, errata updates, everything stayed the same, would that game still thrive? I think that might be a struggle.
Yeah.
Battletech did. Battletech continues to be very successful to this day. And I think it's worth talking about why that might be. I'll pass it off to you guys. Do you guys have any thoughts on why that is?
Earlier you brought up Blood Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Blood Bowl, you know, preserved itself because it was such a simple, concise, compact, you know, system that you had your box, you could play it, and you didn't need anything else. It worked out of the box. Battletech, I think, stayed around for the exact opposite reason, because it almost didn't work out of the box. You had to tweak it. And you had to make it your own. And part of people making it their own is they developed a sense of ownership. And that sense of ownership is, I think, what kept the community going.
I can see that. I can definitely see that.
I definitely think that's part of it. You know, that I've never seen a dead game as well represented as Battletech, really. Especially at conventions and events. And the people who are into Battletech, especially when they were in it, you know, when a lot of people weren't, when it didn't have the following that it has right now, were just super dedicated to it. I think there's a few other things that Battletech had going for it that, you know, a lot of games now, if they do die or if they did die, don't necessarily have. I do think that with Battletech, it has such a deep universe and such a deep rule set that, like, you can get into it today And even if there were no releases going forward, even if, you know, Catalyst shut down tomorrow, you'd still be finding new things in the BattleTech universe 10, 20 years from now.
And if Catalyst did shut down tomorrow, the MechWarrior license is actually different from the BattleTech license.
Yep.
Microsoft has that.
Also fair.
But so, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, so with it being that deep and that much to explore, it's almost like it's not, there's no way it can truly be a dead game. Like, it's, there's just too much out there that exists to really go into it. And there's so many different ways to enjoy it. Like, it feels like, you know, Spaceballs, where it's like every single bit of this game has been merchandised. Like, you went into some of the things before, but like, you still didn't even hit all of the different things that have existed for this. I mean, there was a collectible card game,
yep,
you know, for this. There's been every single type of merch available, like, under the sun for this game. There's dice, pins, patches, t-shirts, you know. I wouldn't be surprised if legitimately there's, like, a Clan Smoke Jaguar flamethrower in existence somewhere. Like, so there's just so much to do with it. It's kind of unbelievable. So I think a lot of that kind of are all factors in what has made this like kind of successful in coming back. There's also that it's a successful crossover franchise with a successful video game,
mm-hmm,
where it's not like a video game that was built on the back of the mini game, and it's not a mini game that was built on the back of a video game, but the two things exist as their own enterprises and still like have a positive influence over each other.
Definitely.
Okay.
And I guess just oh man, I lost it. Womp womp. I was gonna be lastly, and then yeah, and then it totally just
the word doing good.
So I'll ask kind of the $64 million question. Are there things that the BattleTech community did that other war game communities can do when their game dies to help keep their game going?
Keep the enthusiasm. I'm not sure you could duplicate what happened with BattleTech.
Yep. Just
because I sincerely believe that the reason the game got people as involved as it did is because people liked the setting so much and the rules were so janky that you had to come up with your own to make it work. And once you'd done that, you didn't want to stop playing it.
Yeah, I think there is a lot to that. You know, just to add to what you said, I would say that in the mech game market, there were relatively few players, and the other players that were out there were, to my mind, with the exception of a mech ton, which is a historical note, but probably not the most popular game in the world, which is a game developed by Mike Pondsmith, who did Cyberpunk 2020, probably better known now as Cyberpunk 2077. It really was a unique thing in the sci-fi landscape. To me, I think it's also the fact that BattleTech and really all the FASA games were designed almost more like RPGs. They weren't monetized the same way that other miniature games have been since. So when I look at every major competitor to Games Workshop since 2000, War Machine, Malifaux, Infinity, they're all companies that made their money both on making a game system and on selling you miniatures. FASA was the outlier for BattleTech and for all the other games, in that they wrote the rules and they gave you a billion source books, and in some cases fiction books, but they didn't manufacture the miniatures until very recently with Catalyst Lab Games. I think
that's got a lot to do with why it's blowing up.
Yeah, I do too.
Because they coincided the release of the Armored Combat Box with the new game that takes place in 3025. It's in the middle of the Secession Wars. Everything looks the same. It mm-hmm. all looks correct. It all meshes. And it all looks good, which is a new thing for BattleTech.
I think there's that. I think the fact that Iron Wind Metals could continue to make miniatures for fans that would buy them, even if there was a hiccup with the initial IP.
And they are. They're actually making medals of the yep. same designs that came out in the Armored Combat Box.
I think the first few of them
came out last quarter, yeah.
I think the fact that they're in cases where there's gaps, too, the community can come in, things like 3D printed models for BattleTech. you know, where I'm sure for something that hadn't been released, there might be some community inertia to that. Whereas with Battletech, it's always been the case that, like, well, FASA doesn't make that. Iron Metals might make it, but if they don't, you better figure out something if you want to play it. I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, to go back to the original question that you had, which was what were some things that other dead game communities could kind of take away from Battletech? Because I don't think some of those things just aren't really great.
Yeah.
Like, well, sure, you just don't have access to this. Sorry. But, you know, when you look at it, I think looking at how positive that community's been for such a long period of time, that, you know, like even when the game had no support and nothing was coming out, people were so excited to play and really just had a very positive outlook on it. That's always something to take away, you know, because we've gone over 1 million and 2 times that, you know, when you're playing a game and you're having a good time and you're making the people who are playing with you have a good time, you know, it's going to be a game they want to play again. It's going to be a good way to, like, grow the community. And I also think just how far people have gone to make sure that all of that information is available, it was also a very strong point that a lot of dead games could look into, because there were definitely so many ways to find the information that you needed to play the game. You know, I feel like Battletech was definitely one of the first universes that people really started putting into like online databases and websites for Battletech materials, and like, here's some how to plays, here's how, you know, like, here's some, you know, mech data sheets, you know. There's been a lot of talks about, like, well, what can we do to make, you know, apps to make this game more friendly? And I think you know, a lot of that is stuff that other dead games, like, really could benefit from, whether or not, you know, it's something that creates enough inertia for the game to become a resurrected game or not is a whole other story, but those are just always positives, I think, for any gaming community.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think Battletech's a little unique in how it's monetized, specifically in that Catalyst Lab Games and FanPro were able to get the rights to release existing material with some updates from the FASA copyright holder without too much of a headache. Whereas I think other games might intrinsically want to buy the rights to models. And I think that's a bigger bite financially. And I also think it impacts how you monetize a lot of, I guess, how you justify the investment into the material. I think the fact that FASA said, okay, here we have some books and some IP, here you go, at X dollar cost, is different than saying, hey, here's all our digital files for models, which you can cast and
the manufacturing infrastructure to produce them. Yeah,
exactly. So I do think that helped it. I think it's an interesting contrast to look at something like Blood Bowl, which is different in a lot of ways, but similar in a lot of ways. Blood Bowl, I see as being Games Workshop almost came back kicking and screaming to it because they saw the community and third parties in the community monetizing their IP. You know, when Cliff Overwall models getting made by an Australian manufacturer and cast in resin, that's a problem if they're making a profit at it from Games Workshop's perspective. FASA is a little bit different, and I'm sure there's some IP relationship with Iron Metals that they share with Catalyst Labs, blah, blah, blah. I'm not a lawyer, so don't sue me. But I have to imagine there's something there, but it's probably a bit more permissive in a whole lot of ways than, say, something like Games Workshop models.
Right, that they're not going to throw C&Ds at everybody that's printing their own material, because that's how the game was done forever. At the same time, it wasn't just the Griff Oberwald that somebody in Australia was making. It was everybody and their dog that could operate Blender, printing out their own naked Amazon team for Blood Bowl. There's like 9,000 of those out there now on the internet.
I think some of that too is Blood Bowl was okay. It became a community supported project. They had some semi official, you know, when they had the Specialist Games Workshop site up, community-led development of the game, that when that got dropped, became something that you had a passionate enough base that held onto it. and continued to develop it kind of outside Games Workshop's purview, that suddenly became, oh shit, they're developing something for mobile that we have no IP on. Oh crap. And I mean, I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of Games Workshop and IP and lawsuits and the whole chapter.
No, we don't need to do that.
No, we don't. But like,
I didn't want to kick open.
Yeah. I have to imagine that other Dead War games can work within the legal framework and not break anyone's IP, but also help the community enjoy and celebrate the IP in ways that might encourage someone to either invest in it or to get the original company to come back to it. So thinking specifically of an example that's near and dear to our hearts, Dark Age, mm-hmm. If somebody made not specifically Kukulkani models, but models that might be excellent proxies for Kukulkani models, and then advertise them as such, that doesn't break the IP, but it lets people that are passionate about the community, kind of vote with their wallet. And if CMON saw that people were spending thousands and thousands of dollars on totally not K3 models, that might influence their decision to come back to Dark Age in some capacity versus not.
Possibly. Just giving the community ammunition to keep it going. And not punishing them for trying.
Exactly. I see one of the common threads between Blood Bowl and Battletech as extremely passionate communities. People that would show up to random local conventions and still want to play Battletech or still want to play Blood Bowl. Everything else be damned. Even after the game stopped their official support, or in the case of Battletech, it was officially supported, but realistically, okay, cool. I have new art for my Mad Cat. That's great. It's still a Mad Cat,
So now they're up to the Mad Cat Mark IV in their design trees. And they do look a little different.
Sure. I believe that.
Yeah, it'll be nice when they have models that look anything like the technical artwork.
Well, details. Hopefully someday.
It'll happen soon, I'm sure. Of the newer Ironwind stuff has been good. I can't crap on them too hard. But
you know what? Like the new Catalyst Labs plastic stuff
is gorgeous. Yeah, I just like that stuff a lot.
Yeah, like let's get that for the Innosphere. Let's get that for everything. Every time period. Everything is good.
That's kind of what they're working towards. They started out with the Gamma Armored Combat in the beginner box. That's your first stack of 3025 mechs. And with the Clan Invasion Kickstarter, they're bringing the 3050 tech in. And I'm sure that there's going to be another Kickstarter because that's how the world works now.
Right on. Is there anything I've missed in talking about community engagement, Chris or Bob?
No, I think you pretty much hit on just about everything other than where people could be going to check out Battletech nowadays.
Right on. I'm probably not the best quality of that. Bobby, why don't you point people in the right direction?
So if you want better information than we gave you, then there's a lot of it. The first place I would go is the Black Pants Legion YouTube channel.
Okay.
There's a series on there. This guy called Tex. He does Tex Talks Battletech. And I actually heard from this guy. He started out as shit posting because somebody was saying that 40K had better fluff.
Oh, no.
And it veered off into this dude making feature-length documentaries about different aspects of the Battletech universe. And they're fantastic. I put them on while I'm driving. Definitely check him out. If you're looking for a podcast dedicated to Battletech, look up Wolfnet Radio. It's a solid group of guys out of the Midwest, and they have a super friendly community based around that podcast. They got a Facebook group. They got a Discord. They've been teaching me how to play Battletech Classic again on Megamech. It's been great. And that's the other thing, Megamech. We're still in COVID land. So if you want to play something, you can play Megamech. It's free. If you get on that Wolfnet Radio Facebook group and Discord, somebody will teach you how to play. It's a real friendly group of guys. And some girls, I imagine. Yeah, that's where I would start getting into the Battletech community if you want to get back in. Like I just did a couple months ago.
Right on, right on. So, Bobby, we ask all our guests same couple questions. I'll start with the easy one. Do you have a favorite Dead War game?
You know what? Yeah, I would say BattleTech, but it's not really dead. Kind of coming back in a big way. But in an issue of White Dwarf, a lot of years ago, there was a Path to Glory campaign. It was the original Path to Glory campaign.
Yep.
It was only Chaos Warlords against Chaos Warlords. You got a handful of warriors, beastmen, maybe a knight if you were lucky. And you played a campaign with those.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the most fun I had doing anything with Games Workshop.
Wow. Right. Do you think there are any Dead War games people should know more about other than Path to Glory?
Other than Path to Glory. which came back in a bastardized form in every Codex army book or whatever the fuck they call them now.
And also Warcry, and like, and so many other products they've made.
Yeah, but the original one's the good one.
I'll take that as a big no.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Okay. Sorry to put you on the spot. Chris, you got question number three?
All right, so most important thing is clan or inner sphere?
Yes.
There is no yes here.
there is exactly one yes here.
Oh, not making it easy. Owen, clan or inner sphere?
Specifically Wolf's Dragoons. They kind of did both. They were a... I don't want to get into the history of Wolf's Dragoons here while we're trying to end this, but yes. you can have the best of both. And the answer is Wolf's Dragoons. But go ahead.
So I'm going to go with clans because elementals are the best thing ever. Fight me. And also, Omnidex are amazing. We can go through the 61 billion reasons why. But yeah, the Innosphere play catch up on that. And eventually, you know, I guess technically won the war, but the clans won the battle. So I'm going with that.
Because Space AT&T are cowards.
Fair. Yeah, mine will also always be clan. All the time. Better, just so much cooler. Everything about them is cooler. Cooler names, cooler mechs, cooler technology, better looking, like everything. Any question? Yeah, just better. waiting for the hate mail on that one. Bobby.
Well, the Inner Spirit just has better stories, that's all.
Do you have a top three mechs in the game? Like a top three models? Mechs.
I will always love the Mad Cat. It was the one, it's been the poster child since day one. Well, since my day one.
Cool.
I like the Mad Cat. I'm really into the Warhammer. It was
interesting.
It was Natasha Kerensky's mech. She was my favorite character in the fiction. And that's what she piloted when she was infiltrating the Inner Sphere for Clan Wolf.
All right.
Other than that, probably I got to give number three to the Urban Mech.
Nice. Nice.
It isn't good, but it's real cheap. And you have to respect somebody that's willing to get into that thing.
There. Yeah, mine basically it looks, when you look at them from the outside, like a Pokemon evolving. Because my third would be the Puma, because it just, number one, looks awesome. Number two is the only light mech that you can strap two ER PPCs onto and somehow make it a thing. The next up would be the Mad Cat, which is just because it's such a classic model. Like, the Mad Cat has definitely been on the face of so many of the Mech Warrior and BattleTech games, like, or products over the years, that it's hard to say. Like, I couldn't imagine BattleTech without one. And then going back to my days in Mech Warrior 3, the Daishi is my all-time favorite mech ever. It was just so awesome. It was basically playing a game on God mode. You know, you had so much armor that you could take on an entire lance and be okay, and probably be somewhat unharmed.
Yep.
Coupled with a ton of firepower and enough heat sinks to actually not shut down when you fire off like 18 guns at the same time. And again, it's a model that looks really cool. I really, just aesthetic wise, like a lot of the models that have more of that kind of like fighter cockpit as opposed to just like a little window, but That's me. What about you, Owen?
So you asked that question in the form of a lot. I'm an aerospace kind of guy. Clad Ice Hellion all the way.
There you go.
Ah, interesting.
Give me planes. I like me my planes.
Owen's favorite mech is not a mech at all. It's a plane.
in all seriousness, I mean, who doesn't love a Mad Cat or a Warhammer? Obviously, but I always have been kind of the unconventional guy who likes the non mech stuff. I mean, if I had to pick my favorite mech, I'm just that jerk. So that's a me.
You're why I own so many Mad Dogs.
Anything else before we close out? Anyone you want to give a shout out to?
Probably just the guys, really the whole Wolfnet Radio community. They're just the most solid group of gamers you could get involved with to play games during a pandemic, to learn a really complicated system in a fun environment. They're just a good group of guys.
Awesome. Well, that's it. I think we are we're ready to wrap. So thank you everyone for sticking around and listening to this. Hopefully this was informational and hopefully this to keep your favorite dead war game alive. Anything else, Chris?
No, I think we're gonna be good. So for the time being, this is Chris.
This is Owen.
And thanks for listening.
Good joining you guys.
Intro music is Axe to Mouth by Pulp 45, which is Owen's old band. Outro music is Control My Fate by Ataraxia, which is Chris's old band. All songs used with permission. If you like what you hear, please like or subscribe. Thanks.
So, like, the very first time I met Bobby was in the first Malifaux tournament that I ever played in, where I just picked up the game, like, a couple of weeks ago. And, like, I was playing. We never actually faced each other because I won my first two games, and I think Bobby took, like, an early loss against whoever won the actual tournament. But all I kept hearing was about how, like, super crazy and janky his list was. And I was just, like, not fun to play again. And it was just like, oh, man, well, I'm super glad that I didn't run into this thing that I had no idea existed.
I still don't apologize for that.
The next time I met Bobby was at, I forget if it was a TempleCon or a CaptainCon. And, like, I kind of recognized who it was. But at this point, he was just sitting at the end of a hallway. And he looked like, if you've ever seen any of the DC comics that have Ares in it, where he's just kind of, like, sitting on, like, a throne of skulls with, like, glaring red eyes and giving people the death glare. And that's kind of what Bobby looked like at the middle of a convention. And I was just shit. I later found out, it was the product of a very rough game of Infinity, where the table was just set up in a way that was completely unfair. So a little bit later, I think it was the second Captain, that must have been TempleCon, and this was the second CaptainCon that ever existed. So it was still up in Massachusetts before they moved it back to Rhode Island. And I was basically planning on, you know, the first day I was going to play some War Machine and Malifaux. The second day I was running an Infinity tournament. And then the third day I was planning on sleeping, eating breakfast, and driving home. I was like, I'm going to knock my two busy days out early and I'm just going to relax. And the guy who's running the tournament for Sunday is like, look, you know, I have these two guys from New York who want a team, but like, if you don't join them, then I don't know if they're going to be able to play. And I was like, all right, you know, like, I'll join this team of like random strangers who I don't know who they are to be connected with them and realize it's Bobby and
Del Rio.
And,
yeah.
Mike Del Rio. Right. And the very first message I receive in our new group threat is, so yeah, we're trying to figure out a team name. We're thinking Team Dick Punch. And I was like, well, veto on the dick punch. And it took me, I think it was maybe a day. And Bobby's just like, I got it. It's like the greatest thing ever. Team hashtag YOLO swag money. I'm like, fair. You know what? Like,
and that was topical. And what was that, 2014, 15?
Might have been 2015 or 2016.
Yeah, so that was topical then.
Yeah, and also at the time, what was really going through my head was, man, so I'm going to play in this one tournament, I'm never going to, like, hear that again.
Yep.
That's clearly not the case.